Jim and Paul and Bob and Matt are your outdoors hotline. Each Sunday night at 7 on WVOM. To find out what is happening, just listen to the radio. To the Maine Outdoors.
Welcome to the Maine Outdoors. Here's tonight's host, V. Paul Reynolds.
Well, good evening, folks. This is not V. Paul Reynolds. This is Bob Lehman, your host on the Maine Outdoors Show. V. Paul is off tonight, and he's hunting up in Sebois in the Skulkers camp up there. I don't know if they've ever shot a deer up there, but they have a great time. There's a load of them. There's about, must be 15, 18 guys that all get together for a week.
Bring a lot of food.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's for sure.
Tell stories and do a lot of cooking, too.
Yeah, have somebody's a great got time. To cook.
Good food, you know, and so that's where he is. And so I guess he'll be back next week. I'm not sure, but we'll see. Probably having such a good time, might even stay there. So if you're listening up that way, hello, guys. And we're coming to you tonight from the Maine Blueberry Broadcasting System. And we're in, I think, Studio 7, and we're coming over 103.9 FM Bangor, 101.3 FM in Augusta, and 95 FM Rockland. I think that's correct, is it, Jimmy?
95.1.
Okay, everybody might as well get that correct. So welcome again to New England, Canada, and all the ships at sea. That used to be H.V. Kaldenbaum used to say that. You remember him? That's going way back.
Yeah. Can you hear me all right? I'm not hearing anything.
You're not hearing anything?
No.
You're going to have to turn these earphones
on. Hang on, folks. Will I get our guest up and Adam? What
five.
Are you on? You're on next four?
Five.
No,
four?
Five.
Five? How's that? How's it coming?
That's better.
That's good. There, you can hear me now?
Yeah.
I got to have you hear me, I think, because I got a lot of questions for you.
Oh, good grief.
And our guest tonight, who you just heard, is Arthur Allen, and he is back again by popular demand. Wildlife Professor Arthur Allen, and we're just proud to have him here again. He's just knowledgeable fellow about wildlife, and he has instructed classes all over America, actually, including Michigan and Louisiana. That's correct, isn't it?
Okay, California.
Don't
forget Michigan.
Now retired.
And a good while in
living in Brewer.
In Louisiana.
Right up the street from me is a neighbor.
That's correct.
And loves pizza.
Yep.
Yeah.
Join the club.
And we go out to eat every once in a while. You know, tonight I was walking the dog, Arthur, and I think I was telling you on the way over that a lady walked up to me, and it was dark. I couldn't see it. I said, what the heck is she supposed to want? And she says, hi, I'm your neighbor that lives in that house down there. And she says, are you Bob Lehman? And I says, yes, I guess I was last time I looked, yeah. And she says, you're on the radio. And I says, yes, sometimes when as a guest, as a host, a co-host, or whatever. And she says, well, I'll be listening. I've heard it before, and I just want to say that I'll be listening tonight. And I said, well, you surely want to be listening tonight, because we have another neighbor on the same street as you live, Arthur Allen.
Oh, no.
So you'll be listening, and both of us will be talking. And she says, well, I'll tune in. So this is Mrs. De Silva, her name is, and we hope she and her guests are listening tonight.
That's fine. Thank you.
Yes. Isn't that great? Okay, and Arthur and I will be talking about all kinds of things tonight, wildlife. And the number to call if you have any questions for Arthur or just a comment, the number to call is 1-800-966-1039. 1-800-966-1039. That's easy to remember because 1039 is the call letters. 1-800 is easy, and 966 is all you have to remember, 1-800-966-1039. And you have to dial the whole number, even if you're local. Okay, so, and behind the bulletproof glass, how could we not forget our technicians? Jimmy Layton, are you there, Jimmy?
I am, Bobby. I'm hunched down here underneath the counter.
Alrighty.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard.
Okay.
Pull up a chair, and we're going to have a great show tonight.
And on the board out there is our old man, friend, and the scourge of Grand Lake Stream is what I call him.
I'm never going to live that down.
He gets out there in the damn pool. You can't get him out of there.
Especially
after dark.
You might
kick and screaming, but that's it.
Especially after dark.
and after dark. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but yeah.
And he catches fish. That's the big thing.
Non-plod. Problem is you can't see
him on
the
board tonight, and we're happy to have him there. He's a good man. And Norm is going to have a word for us a little later about the Fly Tying Symposium, which is coming right up on Outdoor Trivia, and that's brought to you by the Northwood Sporting Journal. And number one on the list here of outdoor trivia is the deer season, now in full swing. One of our friends, Ryan Lilly, got a big eight-pointer here a couple of weeks ago. I think he said up in Abbott.
I believe it was in that area. Gorgeous fish. Gorgeous buck.
Oh, man. You know, they're beautiful to hang on the wall, but they don't chew too well, so I hear.
I think I was grinding.
That is, we'll get a caller on that because they'll probably say, well, now, wait a minute. They chew pretty good if you cook them right.
Or that, or right? grind them up.
Yeah. Hamburg, right?
Yes.
Hot dogs.
Okay, number two. I was going to ask Arthur. He got a word or two on the deer season. Have you, Arthur?
Yeah, very shortly. This came in from the deer biologist. They're doing a lot of checking. But so far, we're up about 22,000. That's a big load.
I'm kidding, wow.
Yeah.
Some years, that's all we ever get to.
Well, that's true. It's definitely up. Yeah. But that's a good sign.
I'd say.
And it's good for, that means habitat's working as well.
Yeah.
That's extremely important.
Certainly is.
Yeah.
22,000 already.
Putting a dent in the coyote's diet.
We don't have to go anywhere but down east, and we'll be right in the middle of that argument.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, number two on the outdoor trivia program is the Fly Tying Symposium, and that's brought to you every year now, I guess, from the Penobscot Fly Tiers. And Ron, one of the technicians out in the control room, has a word about that right now. Ron, could you fill us in on when that is? And
the symposium is going to be on, let me see here if I can find it. I believe it's the 8th.
December 8th.
December 8th. It's on a Saturday usually, or the 8th could be a Sunday because they do things on Sunday too. But anyways, it is December 8th, and it's going to be from 10 in the morning to 3 in the afternoon, and it's free admission.
Free
admission. Where is it being held at?
And it's going to be held at the Penobscot Conservation Club on
North Main Street, Brewer.
I think it's 570 North Main.
In Brewer, Maine.
Yeah, and it's going to be a collection of fly tiers from around the state displaying their techniques and their expertise. And they'll welcome anybody and everybody to come by and see what they're doing and ask whatever questions you have. It's a really good gathering.
And when did the fly tying get going for the Penobscot Fly Tying?
The fly tying will begin on January 7th at the Penobscot Conservation Club again. And, and that usually starts up around 6 in the evening and goes to like 8 o'clock. Mm-hmm. And they're taking a maximum number of 30 people. So the early signups will get a spot. Just don't wait too long because sometimes it does get filled up fast. But they will start on the 7th of January. It's always a good time. A lot of good instructors. Got a lot of people there to help you out.
Mm. They have a great group every year of instructors, and always have a full class.
Mm-hmm. It's excellent.
If you don't sign up early, you just don't get in. That's all.
Correct. But they've beefed it up. I mean, they used to be 25, so now they're up to 30. But still, I mean, it does get filled up. And
how do you sign up?
Sign up, Ron Dunnett, Rob Dunnett. I mean, why am I saying Ron? Because I'm getting called Ron myself, probably. Yeah, but
that's right.
But Rob Dunnett is the gentleman to contact. And
well, he'll be there on the symposium, won't he?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They'll tell you all about how to sign up, how much it is. And
sure. There'll be a number of people there from the Penobscot Fly Fishers, and you'll be able to
get. Do they have to come up with an admission fee now, or can they do it later? I know the admission fee includes a nice little package of some of the items that they'll be using during the tying.
Yeah, usually what they'll do is, it's $50 for the 6 weeks of fly tying. And they'll give, you get a binder of all the flies being tied and the recipes and a lot of good technical information in there too.
Yeah.
It's great. It's very well put together. And then when you show up in the evening, all you have to do is show up. You don't need to bring anything.
Yeah.
They have all the equipment there for you.
Yeah, so. Devices and scissors and
everything you need.
Whip finishes and everything.
Yeah, it's a great.
Yeah, that's great.
It's a really
Thank
good
you,
evening.
Ron.
Bob, do they use anything like turkey feathers in fly tying?
They do.
Oh, yeah.
Well, it was last week. I was up at Woodlawn Cemetery just beyond the Conservation Club, and I was looking for that same flock. Do you realize there were 39 birds in that flock?
No kidding.
And I know very well that they're coming down and going around that pool where we do the ice fishing derby the kids later on.
Yeah. That's a lot of them in a group, huh?
Yeah.
I suppose they're starting to group up right now, aren't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I've got 19 in the backyard.
Have you?
Absolutely.
Wow. Thanksgiving is just a few days away.
A lot of good eating.
All right.
Okay, yes. All right. One more thing I wanted to mention on the outdoor trivia was the trapping season has been underway now since the general season has been underway since the 1st of November. And when I trapped quite a bit for small game, I always trapped the first week and a half or so, and then the first freeze would come around the 10th and all my water traps would come up for mink and muskrat and so on and so forth. But nowadays you can still continue to trap beaver in certain locations even before January.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's true, isn't it, Art?
Absolutely. Yeah.
We have a lot of beaver. And we also, this year is the first year in about 5 or 6 years or more, I've seen an otter.
Yeah. Well, later on, I've taken a few otter, but on blind sets.
Yeah.
They don't come to bait too well.
Hmm.
I caught one on bait, but it's awful hard to hold an otter. Boy, that's all muscle.
Yep,
there's no fat on an otter, believe me. You know that, Arthur, don't you? Now, beaver, of course, they're loaded with fat. Yeah, you know, they have to scrape it off when you have to skin them, and it's an awful mess. But anyway, I think right now we'll get down to the question of the week. And, of course, the answer to this question will get you a fishing fly that hand-tied by myself here. And we'll get one off to you if you have the correct answer to this question. Arthur, you had the question.
I do. Lately, there's been a term been knocking around a little bit, and it was the term called eruptions. Now, the question is, and it needs a twofold answer, how is that applied to what type of small songbirds, and what will be the cause for the eruptions probably expected this year?
Okay, Arthur, thank you very much. That's the question. The number to call is 1-800-966-1039 if you have the answer, and we'll be right back right after these messages. Okay, and we're back. This is Bob Lehman, your host tonight on the Maine Outdoors Show. And believe it or not, we had no calls on that question, Arthur. I think it was too tough for him out there.
Is that right? Oh, my gosh.
But I do have another question lined right up here, and that would be, can you tell me the first name of Fly Rod Crosby, who is Maine's first Maine guide female? Give me your first name, okay? That's not a hard question.
Fly Rod
Crosby, they called a female, and is Maine's first Maine guide.
Mm.
Yep. And I think we have a call coming in right now.
Yes,
we do. Yes, we do. So somebody, no, we don't. Okay. Nobody knows that. Nobody's listening, I guess, tonight.
I'm surprised because
I'm surprised. That's kind of a tough question, too. But we'll leave it hang.
Oh,
so somebody's coming now. Okay, they probably looked it up on Google. Maybe they got the answer to your first question, Arthur.
No, Wikipedia too. Wikipedia's good.
Can you give us the answer to your first question? To the question?
Yeah, that could be all right.
Yeah.
And here's your caller.
What? Yep. Wait a minute.
Okay, caller, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. Right. What's your first name? Where are you calling from?
Bill, calling from Bangor.
Okay, Bill, can you give us an answer to the question?
Cornelia?
Cornelia is absolutely correct, sir, and you have won one of my hand-tied fishing flies, and we'll have that out to you. Have you been hunting yet?
Nope. Yeah, been out a couple times.
And no luck at all?
Yeah, no luck. Full sign here and there, but
nothing
serious yet.
Yeah. Well, you've got
it's
a track.
Like the first snowfall ever had.
Well, I was going to say, you got a track in snow.
Oh, yeah.
Have some track
stew. That should be really good. for hunting. Yeah. Listen, you hang on, and Ron will or Jim out there in the control room will get your address, and I'll be sure to tie that up for you and have it in the mail in a couple of days.
Awesome.
And
hey,
thank
I got a
you.
Quick question for you.
Sure thing.
What about the Sunday hunting? Do you think they'll ever come to fruition at all for Maine people? Or
That's a tough question right there. I know. What do you think about that, Arthur?
That's a big one, and it comes right back down to the private landowners. One thing we have to do through the Department of Inland Wildlife and Fishery is develop a landowner rapport and understanding and working with them, whether they post their signs or not, whether it's on snowmobile trails or not. Yeah. Those people are the ones that are most concerned about saving one day, and it's Sunday, and they'd like a little peace and quiet and a little safety. That's
yeah,
what it
well,
comes down
that's
to.
That's what it comes down to, doesn't
and
it?
I don't think we're going to win that battle at the legislative group.
No, that's true. My dog.
What about the public land, though? Yeah. You know, they can. Yeah. If they could permit it on the public land for people to hunt on Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
That may work, sir. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a
good idea.
Yep.
That's an idea. Public land.
Some people only have, you know, Sunday. They're working Saturday. All they got is Sunday to hunt. Plus, the out of state is that, you know, want to come up here and hunt.
Very true. That's
right. You're missing out economically, I would think.
Well, that's another good point as well.
That's where our national wildlife refuges can come in, too, by the way.
Yeah. That's true. Yeah. Okay, well, thank you very much for calling in.
Sunday's over there.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. And stay on the line now and give your address to Ron out there, okay?
Yep.
Okay. Thanks for calling.
Yep, thanks.
Okay,
bye-bye.
Yep. And now we'll get to some questions for our guest who was all primed and ready for action over here. And earlier we were talking about crows, and we were talking about squirrels, and we were talking about deer, and we were talking about all kinds of animals, including turkeys. But, you know, Arthur has a little all these squirrels we got this year, and they are everywhere, and they're crossing the road and in the backyard and into the feeders. And can you give us some information on how come, Arthur, that we got so many squirrels?
Okay, let's go way back in history a little bit. As far as the number of species concerned worldwide, we're almost at 300 species. Mm-hmm. And we're used to tree squirrels. The western states are used to ground squirrels. And the story isn't over because we've got those that like to get into birdhouses as well. But this is an extremely intelligent group, and they learn by watching each other, as I've seen in my backyard, and they learn by watching humans. So they're extremely adaptive. They have claws, which helps them for climbing. They come down head first on trees. Mm-hmm. The grip is strong. The tail is a telegraphing device used in defense, as well as recognition or becoming a bully or mating. The eyes are very sharp. The ears are very sharp. They're extremely agile, and they can jump great distances. So that tail also acts as a signal in defense and comes down to balance. There is an Alaska ground squirrel that we'd like to know how it can overwinter so bad. It's down there below the ground about 3 feet in a burrow lined with small bunches of plants and hay, and that's how they can survive almost 8 months of the year deep below. Chipmunks are included in that group, and they're the ones with the big cheek pouches. I've seen them stuff 4 to 5 acorns inside those cheek, they're reaching for another one at the same time.
Right.
The gray squirrels are the ones that we have a lot here, along with the red squirrel and the flying squirrel.
Right.
And I've watched the squirrels during the nut burial, and I've wondered about something for years and years, and there's just a little lead paper on the subject. If you watch carefully, those gray squirrels especially will pick up acorns, other types of nuts, and deliberately bury it. You watch them dig it. They put it down. And the last thing they do is to pat it tight, pat over the top of it. And I kept watching, and I said, well, they're not known to have a lot of olfactory glands for scent, but there's a little bit there. And they've had excellent ears, excellent eyesight. But that mere patting down after burying that acorn is a sign to me that perhaps in the handling of it, biting it, that some of that the chemicals from the saliva must come down onto their paws. So when they're patting that damn soil, that soil over the nut they're putting down, because the rate of recognition is running between 70 and 90%. Otherwise, if it was any higher than that, we wouldn't have any more oak trees growing. But it's something to think about. I don't know if it's that theory is going to work out after it's examined again.
Well, that's interesting. They bury the nut as a single nut, dig a hole, put it in it, probably to hide it, do you think?
No.
They wouldn't have the sense to stat trees, would they? That's
another paper said no. They're able to. They know what they're doing. One other group tested the brain as it was working toward the fall during nut gathering and during this caching and burial period, and they found that the brain enlarged. Well, there are certain chemical receptors that we think are responsible for being able to recognize where those nuts have been buried. So between that and the saliva and the chemicals and the little pat down that they go through, they come up with about 70 to 90% success ratio in finding those nuts again.
Well, not only that, they probably can smell them too, can't they?
I wish I knew the smell was that good.
Well, most animals have a lot better smell than we do.
Yeah, we once said that wild turkeys didn't have any smell, but believe me, after working with them for years, they do.
Yeah, we have a caller, Arthur, I guess. You there, caller?
Hello.
Hello. What's your name, sir, and where are you calling from?
This is Jim, calling from Webster.
Okay, do you have a question for...
I've seen the squirrels and the birds all summer and all year long, actually, but it's funny to watch the red squirrels.
Yes.
When they grab a sunflower seed, they'll sneak off.
Can you hang on, caller? We got to take a break. Hang on, caller. We got to take a break right here, okay? Stay on the line. We'll be right back with more of Maine Outdoors right after this.
Oh, boy.
More Maine Outdoors next on 101.3 Augusta, 103.9 Bangor, 95.1 Rockland, the voice of Maine.
And we're back with more of Maine Outdoors, and this is Bob Lehman, your host tonight. And V. Paul is up in Seboise, Maine, and he's up there. He's not hunting in the lake there, I guess. Maybe they do take canoes out once in a while and get to some foreign country, but for the most part, they're land hunting for big deer, and I don't know of any they've ever shot in, but they have a great time cooking and eating and telling stories. But anyway.
Don't forget your caller.
Let's get back to our caller, who is still on the line, and he had a question for Art, and Art is trying to answer that question. Are you there, caller?
Yeah.
Good.
I feed the squirrels sunflower seeds. Well, most of the animals, rabbits, coons, they all eat, well, rabbit will eat pizza if you give it to them. But anyway, the squirrels go through the seeds, and they'll pick one out, and then they'll go bury it and pat it down. And I keep laughing at them because as soon as it sprouts in the summer, the rabbits come along and eat it. So it's a vicious cycle. But how do they know which seed to pick out? How do they know?
How do they know, Arthur? I guess that's the question.
There's a couple of things I can offer right now. Be careful of the source of your sunflower seeds and any other type of seed. There's a wax moth that can creep in there very carefully. And the first thing you know, you've got little cavities in seeds. Those are the ones that are rejected immediately. There's something wrong there. It changes, it changes the chemistry. There's a hole there. And they may actually detect that there's a small grub. It's less than a quarter of an inch in length, blonde colored. and that wax moth will come out and it will start chewing into other seeds. So if there's something different about that seed, they're able to detect it, apparently. Beyond that, I don't know, but make sure that your sunflower seeds or any seed that you put out is clean and it's fairly fresh and it comes from a reputable dealer.
Right. Well, I know about that, right, because I'm a seed salesman. I was for 40
That's
years.
That's why I mentioned that.
You have another question, caller? Are you satisfied with that answer?
I am. Thank you very much.
Okay. Thanks for calling in. And I think we had another caller, didn't we, Ron?
No, we're all set.
Okay, we're all set. Okay. Okay, I had a question for you, too, on the crows. Can we get off to a crow? Are you still on a crow?
Go ahead.
I had a question for crows.
Yeah.
A friend of mine once told me not long ago that crows have a funeral for other crows when they die. And I thought that was a big joke he was telling me. But he said, oh, no, when a crow dies, crows come from all over and gather around in the trees and communicate between themselves by different caws, and so on. And they carry on all day, and then the next day they disappear, gone. And is that true, Arthur, or is he telling me a big story?
I think there's a good deal of truth behind that.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, crows quite often will develop suburban areas, rural areas, and even in town, into what we call clans. There's a leader in that clan. And the leader is, and the sub-leaders as such, both male and female, will also consist in developing and feeding the young.
Mm-hmm.
So that's on a relay system, and somebody hangs around the nest for protection from hawks, eagles, and owls. So, what happens, apparently, are these clans will get together periodically, so much that they're probably anywhere between the middle hundreds to 600 or 700 that I've seen.
That's so.
Yeah. One place I go to is toward Audubon and Fields Pond area, and I've seen this. And that cluster, especially in the spring, is called a murder of crows.
A murder of crows.
Yeah, it's from the English, and it doesn't really mean to kill in this particular clay.
Sure.
It's a collection.
Yeah.
Well, we've discovered that these birds are finding each other. That is a good source of mating and selection, and it's probably the best way to prevent or slow down any inbreeding tendency, whereby defective young can be produced.
Yeah.
So in the case of one of these in the clan, the others have learned about it, apparently by communication and its vocalization.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing you might see is a little temporary gathering around a dead bird.
Yeah.
That's common in other animals, including elephants.
Yeah.
And in also, especially there, and also in the African wild hunting dog.
Yes, sir.
I don't know if it's a sign of recognition of that particular bird or whether it's paying attention to a fallen bird of some sort.
Yeah. What relation are they to the raven?
Raven? Ravens tend to be, larger birds?
Yeah.
Heavier beak?
Yeah.
Ravens tend to...
You don't see too many ravens around.
And they tend to be toward mountains a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
Lakes and streams, they'll come to field and streams, but they tend to be nesting solo and in higher places quite often. And crows and ravens don't get along very well.
No, probably not.
It's a bad situation.
We have a caller. Huh? Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
What's your name, please? Where are you calling from?
It's Bob in North Yarmouth.
Oh, North Yarmouth. Huh? You must be picking us up in the Augusta station or in Rockland station?
Yeah, Augusta all the time.
Okay, great. Do you have a question for our expert here tonight on wildlife?
Yes, I do. You aroused my curiosity by talking about exploding songbirds or something like that, but you never told us what it was, so I'd like the answer.
You get the answer?
Yeah.
It was eruption.
Eruption, right.
Not exploding, but eruption.
Both a local friend here in the Audubon group, and well known as Bob Duchesne, and another one that's coming out of Audubon and connected with Cornell Laboratory is Ron Pittaway. But we're looking at an eruption taking place in the winter finch forecast for the season. And that's when the movement of those birds, such as the grosbeaks, the purple finch, crossbills, red poles, both types, will be coming down along with the pine siskins. And that's due to what we call a cone seed failure in northeastern Canada above Ontario especially. And those seeds are very important, coming from birch pendant-type cones and from the spruce and the hemlock trees. And apparently they're not making up that well, so we're going to see what we call an eruptive movement, and it looks like it's going to be a good winter finch season for us and the bird feeders especially here. Does that help?
Yeah, that's great. I wanted to know what it was. If they do come here, do they go back again when the seed stock is better?
Yes, they do. I'm a member of the Feeder Watch out of Cornell also, and I've been doing this about 18 years. And you'll find that they'll come to the feeders. They love the finch food, which is the small seed, and the Niger, which comes from Egypt. And those seeds are very important.
One more question. Is there any update from Cornell on the ivory-billed woodpecker?
Boy, oh boy. I was in Louisiana when that was getting hot. And we were going over into the big thicket area in Texas. And the reason for that by canoe was a bad photograph of what looked like an ivory bill that crossed in front of this paddling canoe. And we've never been able to locate the bird. We tried desperately to record any sound in that area for months and months by various teams. And so now that would left us with a big mystery.
Yeah, I read a couple of books about that. Is there still any thinking that they exist in Cuba?
I think so. Cuba, we don't know enough about, quite frankly. Close by a country and tropical-based island, and we don't know enough about Cuba's wildlife as yet. And we're learning a lot more, but with taking teams who are being educated through the universities there, sometimes with our help at various universities. And that's going to be important because they've got to get into the field. It's the field work that I have to say is one of the most important things we have in finding new birds and finding proper habitat.
Yeah, I know they have a mounted ivory billed at Audubon, but boy, it's a pretty motley-looking thing at this point.
That was it. That's very motley. I've seen photographs only of that one, sir.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Oh, thank you for calling.
Good luck.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Keep your eyes open, sir.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, if I see one here, it's going to be a pileated or
yeah, right. Okay.
You betcha.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks again.
We've got another caller.
We have another caller, but before I take that call, hang on, caller. Would you hang on about a minute or two? Because I got to do a commercial right here. And why would you not go to a place called General Appliance in Brewer for all of your camp appliance needs, whether they are gas lights, gas ranges, gas refrigerators, gas freezers, or top-of-the-line compost toilets?
Ride the wave, baby.
You know it, baby.
Wave of the future.
Okay. General Appliance in Brewer is located at 91 Center Street in Brewer. Easy to find because you just come across the old Banker Bridge, take a right and a left, you're on Center Street, and they're located on the right. They got almost the whole block there. Can't miss them. It's a family-owned business since 1920s. It used to be Perkins Supply, but now it's General Appliance in Brewer, and it's owned by Al Elkin, a peach of a guy who knows his stuff. And on the side, he likes to collect old radios. But anyway, let's get back to the business here. They sell well-known Chevelle gas ranges, as well as the compost toilets. And these are the Y, the Wave, Baby. And if you haven't had one, you really need one, if you have a camp especially, and you got an outdoor toilet, you might call them, or an outhouse, and the mosquitoes you can get away from. And there's no running water, no plumbing is used at all, no septic, and no leach fields, and no environment issues. And as I said, no mosquitoes. And the big thing about, isn't that right, Jim and Norm?
That's no, for sure. Yeah.
The only thing the Japanese have on them is that they have heated seats. So
yeah, We can arrange that. You ask Al.
Oh, you brought up something. There's a new upgrade in that toilet area, and that is it's lined with fur for the winter period.
Yeah, right. Oh, yeah. What kind of fur?
Rabbit fur. Yeah. Of course. Absolutely. Kills, okay.
You know, the big thing about General Appliance and Brewery, is they sell Paul and I's books over there. A great big rack, just as you come through the door. And they're all right there. So be sure and stop in and see them. They're great over there. They have appliance workers over there that can come repair your appliance that you have trouble with, and they're magic men. They really are unbelievable. And now to get to our caller. Are you there, caller?
Yes, I am.
Okay, do you have a question for our guest tonight?
Yes, I do.
Okay, go for it.
I have two questions about chronic wasting disease.
First, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Mike, and I'm calling from Holland.
Okay, Mike, go ahead.
Hi, Mike.
My first question is, what are the problems with consuming venison from an infected animal, and how are they going to keep it from infiltrating into the state?
Do you have an answer for that one, Arthur?
What are we talking about? Chronic wasting disease or
whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Number one, that's on our doorstep to the north and to the west. I think we reported on that last time here, I think.
Yes.
Right.
And there's a task force out looking at that. We're trying to stop the movement of all venison or deer meat whatsoever now. And we're really looking at the farms for the farm-raised deer. So I think the thing right now is, if the animal is healthy-looking, you have to keep in mind that that particular organism can move through what we think is the bloodstream, the saliva. It's liquid, such as the urine, and it can be transmitted to other animals that way also. So I would be a little bit concerned about consuming the meat. However, I'm not an expert, I don't think, in that particular category. And I'd say check in with two or three of our wildlife biologists in particular, and be very, very careful with who does your butchering.
Well, if you cook the meat well, wouldn't it be fine if you cooked it well, Arthur?
That works with salmonella, that works with E. coli, but yeah. I'm not too sure it's going to work with this causal organism.
Yeah.
It is a tough baby.
Oh, yeah.
Don't eat the brain.
Don't eat the brain.
Yeah, it goes into the nervous system. That's correct.
Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah. Yes, it does.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you so much for calling.
Yep.
You been hunting yet?
No.
No?
I haven't been out. I probably won't make it out this year.
I thought perhaps
you feel good.
I thought perhaps you had a deer and you were worried about eating it.
No, we've butchered up a few in my garage, but I haven't been out.
Okay. So. Well, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate it.
Okay.
Yep.
Have a good one.
Bye-bye. We got another call, you say? No, we're all set right now. Number to call is 1-800-966-1039, 1-800-966-1039. And we have an expert on wildlife and birds and snakes and you name it, is Arthur Allen, wildlife biologist, not a biologist, a professor. Probably knows more than biologists do in the long run, I don't know.
He teaches biologists.
He is taught by wildlife biology all over the country. And places like Michigan, Louisiana, and good Lord, all. And he's
California.
He's retired now.
Oklahoma.
He's an old Brewer boy, went to Brewer High,
mm-hmm.
University of Maine. He knows a lot of my friends that used to be at professors up the university. Harry Everhart was one, old Harry. I knew Harry and
Absolutely.
Some of the other fellows.
I worked with him, and I drew up some of those maps that the other biologist would be bringing in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did it with a Leroy lettering device.
We have a caller, Arth. Another caller. Are you there, caller?
Yes.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name's Lori, and I'm calling from Amherst.
Okay, Lori from Amherst. Do you have a question?
Well, I do. I have noticed, like, we're going partridge hunting, that you don't see as many partridge as you used to. And someone had told me that it's because of the turkeys, that they're ruining the partridge nests and things. I was just wondering if that's true. Are turkeys territorial and doing this?
Lori, right out of the University of Maine, you're right on the subject area right now. A master's study over a four-year period has indicated what we were concerned about. How are we doing on our population, and how is our management working, such as the hunting season? And the final report was they're doing quite well, and we worried about this turkey business. That's true.
Yeah.
You have to watch how these birds nest. The ruff grouse will go under a log or something on that order, and it's a very protective nest as such. The wild turkey tends to be in semi-open areas. You notice that long neck? They love to nest in areas where they can put their neck up high and see clear across a food plot or an opening like that. So they tend to be on the edge at the base of a tree, something like that. A little backup necessary. There is a possibility of overlap, but if you watch the grouse carefully, and I have done this as a kid hunting with my dad, for example, out down on the airline, clear down to Machias Lakes and area. And you'll watch them, and those birds will shy away from larger animals and larger birds.
Okay.
That may be a safety thing for the ruff grouse. They mm-hmm. tend to be solo. They tend to be quite quiet. The turkey, as you know, up to a point makes a good deal of noise. It tends to scratch a great deal, leaving trails. When they come to my feeders, they also leave their calling card, which is not
nice
to walk in, you know?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Does that answer your question, Lori?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
But I just don't see as many as anymore as I used to, especially down here on backwoods roads and things.
Yeah,
and I was just curious about it.
They don't like population either, and that's kind of
I think we'll be looking at that, Lori, for sure.
All right.
University
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
Okay. Yep. Bye-bye.
We had another caller, did we? We don't right now. Okay. The number to call, 1-800-966-1039, 1-800-966-1039, if you have a question for our professor of wildlife here. And we don't get him on here too often, but when we do, he's a wealth of information as far as outdoor animals and birds and everything else. And as far as bird feeders, about time you got your bird feeder cleaned up and put out and stashed up with food. And what would you suggest for put out for food and for kinds of food and suet and everything that birds might need to come by right now?
Okay, depending on your backyard or even front yard or out in a farmyard somewhere. Be knowledgeable as the kind of birds that you've seen. That's important. What's available in sacks or feeders, food of some sort, is built. First of all, there is a mix which is available. It starts with sunflower seed, goes down to millet and sorghum, cracked corn, which I don't think too much of. It attracts other birds too much, big birds. So be careful where you are. I trade with the Blue Seal people, and then on special orders I go to New Hampshire at Duncraft Seed Outfit. They're very good and timely.
I used Nature's Choice.
Nature's Choice.
Good caller.
That's a good one, isn't it? I've been using that for years.
Yeah, they're on web. They have websites, too.
I hate to use a commercial here, but a lot of places sell it, but I've been buying it at Blue Seal.
Yeah.
And I know they distribute it all over. So it's a real good. It got a good mix in it.
Okay.
Everything mixes it, to all of
it's,
the.
It's a mix.
Most
it's,
all the birds will come to that.
Get so some Niger feed in there for
yes,
the smaller the birds.
Always
we have
too.
A caller.
Yeah. We have another caller.
Okay.
And is you there, caller?
Hello, Steiner calling from Vermont.
Okay, Vermont. You picking us up in Vermont?
Sir. Well, I'm up in Maine right now.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, you should have left it at that and said, sure.
I'm impressed, really. Yeah, right.
Did you have a question for a wildlife expert here tonight?
You got 1 minute.
Well, I'd like to comment. Your guest is wonderful. One of the favorite things I've always enjoyed about the gray squirrels, you mentioned that for communication, the tail, and also for balance.
Yeah.
And one of the funniest things is watching a squirrel do the Olympic gymnastics, getting to the bird feeders, is seeing them up.
You can buy bird feeders. You can buy bird feeders with a bar across the front, and the squirrel will push that right down and block him, so he can't feed in it at all. Only the birds can feed there, and they're out.
Right, but watching them try to use their tail for balance, getting there, and then warn the other squirrels to stay away.
Yeah.
It's multitasking. It's an incredible ability. I always would have had a squirrel on a family crest because they. They got like thumbs, and they know kung fu, and they just have a wonderful sense of humor.
They do.
But, yeah,
seems
indomitable.
They do.
But what I wanted to comment on too earlier was about the main guide and the females.
You gotta
honor our First Citizens natives. How many amazing guides did the natives provide for food?
30 seconds.
The pilgrims, you mean?
Yeah, true.
And for
spiritual, but also back home, if anybody goes fishing southern Vermont and in Benton County, be it Otter Creek or
Follow, we got to go. We're coming up to a hard break, and we appreciate you calling in. Going to give us a call next week. We'll be on again at the same time from 7 to 8 with the Maine Outdoors Show. And thank you so much for calling.
Jordan.
Thank you again.
All right. We'll catch up with you.
Have a nice night. Thank you so much. And this is Bob Lehman tonight on the show. And as I said, we'll be back next week. And I think Paul will be back to tell us all about his hunting.
Good.
And we'll surely be asking you to listen. And thank you ever so much.
All right.
See you next week.
And good night from
Maine Outdoors.
Get outdoors.